welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Rich Hobbs here, and joining me on today's show to talk about the latest signings in Mascherano and Trincão, the imminent signings, hopefully, of Eight Nori, the latest on season tickets, as well as the training gear that got dropped today. I'm joined by Chalk and Cheese, Little and Large, Rubber and Glue, Stu and Dan. How are you both?
I'll accept. Also, Little and Large is fair. That one's more than fair. The rest,
heavily debatable.
You both love it. But guys, it feels like forever since we've done a podcast, particularly about Wolves with all the international break going on. So I am really keen just to get right in it today, talk about some of the latest stuff coming out of Wolves. I want to just cover, it was a couple of weeks ago now, but the signing of Yerson Mosquera, 20-year-old centre-half, out of Colombia. Seems like a bit of an investment for the future, being that he's, you know, relatively young. But start with Yerson. I'm going to go to your dad. Stu, what were your thoughts on the signing?
Different. Not a Mendes signing, which is always a shock to the system these days. But yeah, it's nice to see him change attack a bit and doing something a little bit out there. I mean, now obviously the good part of Brexit, that we can actually look far and wide now, and there's no real rules that can stop. I mean, this wouldn't have happened beforehand. So if he's one of the 3,000 players on that mythical list that was mentioned a couple of years ago, then superb. But everyone who's anyone about South American football has raved about the kid. So, I mean, obviously none of us have seen him. Even the lawyers on Twitter can't say that they watch this kind of thing in the middle of the night, because no one does. So it's rare that you get a complete unknown like this. It's quite exciting.
Yeah.
Go on, Dan. Sorry, the most exciting Colombian export since crude oil.
That could have gone very south if we weren't careful with Colombian exports. From the bit of reading and a bit I've been done digging up, and I think there's a lot of potential with the signing. Obviously, we wouldn't have got him if they didn't think so, because it's a decent outlay as well. There are a couple of red flags for me, if I'm going to be honest, and I didn't want to start on a negative note, but there are. And I think whenever I get here, a defender's side was sort of physical, aggressive, raw, very athletic. It does sort of spring to mind that if he's using that to cover big deficits in his game, can one of you two just calm my fears down about that sort of language, or am I just, I've not watched enough football recently, or taken anything enough about Wolves at least?
I mean, you could have said that about Jesus last year or the year before, whenever that was, when he popped up and then completely failed. But it's a young defender. It's very rare they're going to be ready made at that age, and especially from a different continent, let alone different country. So it's got, I mean, you want your defenders to be a bit like that anyway. They have to learn, and coming over at such a young age to the Premier League, he's going to have to adapt, and it'll take time. But if he is raw, then it's a base to build on, and he's got no habits, hopefully.
I mean, Scott Sellers did say in sort of the announcement clip and the press afterwards that, you know, he is a defender who wants to defend, but he is also very good technically and composed on the ball. So that does, probably sort of quell my sort of fears. And I guess it will be formation depending as well. And, you know, if we were playing the Nuno back three, he'd potentially have a little bit more protection, shall we say, to kind of within the space around him being quite young. So it'll be, as I say, interesting for me to see where he slots in the, the roster and the depth of the centre halves at the moment. Dan, where do you sort of see him featuring in the squad? Do you see him being I'm not going to say first choice centre half, because I don't think that's what he's brought in for, but do you think he's going to be competing in that 18 man match day squad, or do you think he's going to be shipped off to Switzerland in the next 3 weeks?
No, I don't think it's that sort of sign. I think if you look at his sort of physical attributes, he's good to go to make Premier League appearances this season. He told us it depends on what you said there in regards to what formation we play and how quickly he adapts to the actual physicality. He's built like a brick shit out, so hopefully he can fit straight in, learn off Willy Bolly and the other centre-backs that are around him. There was a red flag about it. He's got good recovery pace, which I understand where you were coming from, but hopefully he can be our equivalent to what Wesley Fofana has been for Leicester, young, raw, but as soon as he had his chance, he took it, hasn't he?
Yeah, 1,000%. I've alluded to it at the start. I'd be interested to sort of see how much he, let's say, pushes someone like Kilman, who is a few years older than him, but is that very much reserve centre-half.
Hopefully he pushes him out the door.
I was going to say, each their own on that. We could have a debate on Kilman, but we'll save it for another day, gents. Because the person I really want to talk about today is Francisco Trincão. It was rumoured a couple of weeks ago that we'd been sort of linked to him. And Wolves have managed to nab him on a loan with a view to a permanent, a bit out of nowhere. Announced on a Sunday afternoon, or Sunday morning even, just a bit out of nowhere. And I think it's hopefully a real signal of the club going back to their tried and tested method under Fosu, from recruitment of signing players who, you know, aren't quite at the position they want to be at their current club, giving them a platform to shine and almost having a try before you buy and signing them then on a permanent to hopefully, well, for their point of view, to move on for, you know, twice as much money in a year's time. And, you know, we could talk about, we'll probably end up talking about Barcelona's financial situation, which is why this has happened. But guys, I was trying to think of the right way to say this. It's a bloody good signing, isn't it? Hopefully. Dan, how are you feeling about it?
I said earlier on our Twitter page, Rich, that we haven't given this the fanfare that it needs. We should have been outside of Compton for his arrival. I know he wasn't there on arrival day today, but when he steps foot in Wolverhampton, there needs to be some people at Compton to welcome him to our glorious city, because it's a signing of one of the highest calibers that we can be as a club at the moment for me. He's been compared to sort of a future Ballon d'Or winner by Portuguese legend Paulo Futre today, and I'm all for it.
That's the kind of expectation levels you love to see set around a young player, isn't it, Stu? Are you disappointed, Stu, he's not more of a James Henry?
Yeah, I mean, he's got time to get the James Henry hair, let's be honest. But it's more of a Trincão than Trincão. Let's get it right.
Apologies, everybody.
But incredible signing. I think being the connoisseurs of European football, like me and Gully are, I mean, I've seen him a few times for Barcelona. Yeah, admittedly, it was against like cadets and stuff like that, but he's just Neto again. And to have two of them is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the fact that, you know, yes, he's Portuguese as our half our team, but the fact that he was at Braga with Lage, I think, is a big, big plus for us. I've seen a few people be slightly negative about his stats at Barcelona in terms of his goals and assists output, but I think that, if you actually look, a lot of his appearances last season were from the bench, am I right in thinking?
Yeah, just look at the players that we had in front of him. Just forget Messi. You've got Griezmann, Dembélé. He was going to struggle to break into that side straight away, wasn't he? So don't judge him on his appearances. I've always been of the mindset this has been another tactical movement of Mendes' chess, where he was sold to Barcelona from Benfica on the hope that he was to succeed. And if he wasn't to succeed, he could go to Wolves after a year. And this is why we've paid over the odds for Semedo, and now we've got Trincão on the cheap for this summer. It's just all part of the Mendes house of cards that we live in.
I mean, that's Potentially. I mean, I always kind of viewed it, and I think it's been good in sort of other shows, that when Mendes signs up a player, and I think Trincão might be a really good case in point for this one, that, you know, he very much lays out a vision for their career. And it's almost like you go from here to here to here. If you keep performing at the level you do, I will get you that move from Benfica to, you know, a pit stop of, let's say, Wolves, and then you'll move on to the next club. And, you know, he's gone to Barcelona. Let's be honest, it's a dream move for 99% of footballers. You know, it's like one of those where if Barca could, apart from Zidane, if Barca could knock in, you're going. And because of Barcelona's bonkers financial situation, and, you know, the fact that Messi is holding the club to ransom at the moment, you know, for Hampshire plays off. Do you see him being a game one starter, or do you still see him, again, depth chart wise, is he behind, let's say, Traoré still, or do we see him being number one star boy next year for us?
I think you got to consider Traoré not returning, first of all. So,
I was going to say, my other question was going to be, is he an addition or a replacement? So, take either.
I mean, from what I saw of him, he's more of a kind of wide midfielder rather than a winger anyway. So, and more of a kind of, like they were playing when they were playing inverted towards the end of last season, where they were cutting in on their other foot. If he's playing like that on the right-hand side and cutting in, and you got Neto doing, eventually when he comes back, doing the same on the left wing, cutting in onto his right, then they can switch around. There's no real place for Adama anyway, so I'd imagine that he will be first choice from day one. Otherwise, you ain't going to get a player like that coming here on loan to put him on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, if it's to be reported, which, you know, hell, why not? I think, are we paying all of his wages, which, again, are reported to be about 140 grand a week, which is eye-watering for Wolves. He must be basically our top earner at this point. Dan, you sort of alluded to it at the start, you know, how there's been a lot of hype the last 24 hours around him, but almost not enough. Do you see this as, I guess, the next Jimenez or next Costa in terms of, like, the impact that those signings then made on loan to then sign as a permanent? Do we sort of see it being at that level, do we think?
I think it's inevitable with the talent that this player has, that we'll make money on him come 2-3 years' time, because I think this is another, like you said, Mendes move where he's got a career plan for all of his clients, and it either goes down route A or B. And I think, unfortunately for the lad, he's ended up at route B at Wolves, but this is like his stepping stone back to the top. You got to look at Diogo Jota, the career path that Mendes has set for him, and how much money he's made on the back of Wolves and Jota going to Liverpool. So we're just living Jorge Mendes' world again, and this is just another one of his moves, which I said I was hoping for in sort of January time, that Mendes would sort us out this summer after sort of rifling through our pants and taking Jota and Doherty away from us last summer.
No, you're right. It feels like we're somewhat owed one, would you say, Stu? Yeah.
I mean, let's just get it right. There's no, without him, this type of deal would never in a million years happen. No. So before people get all judgmental and the usual Portugal FC nonsense comes out on, I mean, not obviously not from Wolves fans, but from everyone else, it's just jealousy because he's not their toy. Their clubs are not his toy, and ours is. And it's brilliant because we get 3 years out of Trincão here. Never in a million years would he come in, say, to the equivalent, say, to Palace. Even with Vieira, there's no way they'd pull something like that off without an agent behind them. And we've got him behind Wolves, so use him when you can.
You're still looking at Wolverhampton as a city where players from the continent don't want to be living in the Midlands.
Well, no one knows what it is.
Exactly. It's sort of similar to Newcastle. Palace probably would have more chance of signing this sort of player without an agent being involved than what Wolves had, because just because of the London draw.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And what I was going to say, look, this isn't our time to defend Jorge Mendes and his agency, but I would argue that our relationship with Mendes is slightly more legitimate than other clubs because, well, Fosun have a stake in the business. And I've always seen it very much as Fosun Group own a football club. They also have part ownership of a company that essentially, you know, a football agency. Why would you not connect the two businesses? It makes zero sense not to have them, not have any, and I hate the term, but synergy. So, you know, we are in this, we are in Jorge Mendes's world, but he's in Fosun's. And that's how I've always looked at it, that Mendes is pulling the strings, but hopefully Fosun are above his.
Via Chairman Guo, let's just be completely clear. There's no actual link. It's next to each other.
Yeah, it's all next. But you can see how it, for me, you wouldn't not have a business where you wouldn't use your somewhat sister companies or affiliated companies. But that's the only two players Wolves have signed so far. It does feel, which is a lovely loose term, that Wolves will likely sign Renate Nori on a permanent transfer. So that feels like it's almost from the old regime. So it's probably been very much directed from people beyond Bruno Lage. But it feels like Jeff Shee, along with some of his Wheeler dealings for Mosquera and Trincao, seems to be playing a little bit of a risky gamble in terms of the proposed fees around Eight Norway and Vitinha, that we've just let the clock run down on it. So it was, I think it was about 18 million each for Eight Norway and for Vitinha. Apologies, I've not got the figures quite right. But it appears for Eight Norway that we've basically managed to wait and wait, let that proposed deal go down and get a bid accepted for about 10 million, which I don't think I'd have been unhappy if we'd have signed Eight Norway for 18 million. I think he's got a lot of potential and he really improved second half of the season. And he talked about in the end of season show how his attacking metrics and, you know, the top 80% of left backs. But to get someone of his quality for 10 million, I'm having a bit of that, boys.
I mean, he's gone full Chinese Barry Fry on this. There's no dirty whatsoever. I mean, the kind of cheeky little 50% sell-on clause, which he's not going to be sold off, is he? We'll buy that out in a year or so's time if we need to, if he's looking like a superstar. For that 8 million. Yeah. Then we've spent, like with the when we got Ruby for free and then actually paid a fee for him later. It's just really, really clever investment, as you'd expect from Fosun. But yeah, I think you can comfortably say he's £10 million better than Ron Giles at this point.
I'd probably argue he's at least 9 million, maybe 8 million. But yeah, I completely get your point. Dan, would you be happy if 8 Norway for 10 million?
I would have rode my bike to Paris to pick him up for 10 million. I think we've got an absolute steal. I've said numerous times on the podcast that he's a future French left back for the full national side, unless he decides to change allegiances, which I know there's been rumours of in the last sort of couple of months, but he is good enough to go all the way to the top for me. The fact that we've got that money, we've signed that player for that fee is, like Stuart said, it's shady as fuck. Because I don't know how another Premier League club, after seeing some of the performances that he's putting, hasn't tried to gazump us.
Yeah, for such a, in this day and age, moderate fee. And again, it's all reported, and you know, you'll notice with Fancast, we don't like to do lots of speculative transfer rumors if we can help it, because we tend to get it wrong most of the time. But you know, it looks like Vinagre.
Sorry, let me quickly just jump onto that.
Oh God.
Let's just talk about the one of the main Wolves sports journalists out there who wasn't even sort of reporting on Trincao being an imminent signing. So if Wolves' main journalist isn't on top of in the know like that, how are podcasts like us and other ones out there supposed to be on top of it? all these like speculative transfer rumors you see online with Source Football Insider, Source HITC, all these football opinion-based transfer rumors. There was, you may as well just drop me a DM and I'll tell you whether it's true or not, because 99% of the time these football pieces that you find online are bullshit. First, and keep everything close to the chest. Just until you see a Wolves player with the shirt unveiled or something from the official Wolves Twitter outlet, you may as well discard any transfer rumour you see on Twitter, because it's 99% bollocks. Sorry.
That's okay, because I'm trying really hard not to jump on a rant there, which I won't, because we have got a tight running order today, guys, and I've completely forgot what my next point was going to be. I remember now, Vinagre, looks like he's out of the door. Again, reportedly, I think it's Sport in Lisbon. So, again, it'll be going back to Portugal, which is a real shame that his development's curbed. But we're talking about him going for 10 million. So it's like, you know what? If we're swapping, yeah, I liked Vinagre, I did. But on watching Ait Nouri and watching Vinagre, I think they've both got really high ceilings. But I feel like Ait Nouri is just like a bit more accomplished at this point, and they're basically the same age. So, and I think would we all be sort of in agreement, Ait Nouri over Vinagre?
Oh yeah, I think
definitely. But I still don't think you can write off Vinagre as a future star at European level. I think he still needs to do a lot of learning defensive wise, but he's definitely got attributes. If he was like similar to Cristiano Ronaldo early in his Man United career with all the step overs, once he got rid of that and properly knuckled down, he turned into a superstar. And I'm not saying Vinagre is going to turn up that sort of level, but he could easily go on to be Portuguese main left back in the future. And that's why Sporting Lisbon, current champions of the league, have come in for him now.
Yeah,
I said with him, it's almost like the Sam Vokes effect in a way for him. It was unfortunate that I think if we hadn't got promoted straight away and he'd had another year in the championship, I think they would have probably done him a world of good to stop all that nonsense and kick it, well, literally kick it out of him and learn how to play properly rather than trying to be a fancy Dan all the time. And I think it just hasn't happened for him here. And I think it just works for all parties.
You've got to take it to account, Stuart, as how good we've had it with Johnny as well.
Yeah.
So every time Vinagre has had a chance, it's been sporadically. So when he comes in and makes a mistake, it's through not being game sharp, isn't it?
That's what I mean. When he had his chance, we then had Barry Douglas there, and then when he was sold, we brought Johnny in, and he just flew from the start. So it's again a case of right player, wrong time for everyone concerned, I think.
No, and I think you're right that he's never quite done enough to seize the opportunity when he had one. You know, I remember in the championship, he shone a bit, but he never really asked enough difficult questions to over Douglas. And don't get me wrong, Douglas was great that season. But whenever Johnny wasn't playing, and he had spells out injured in that first season, let alone after, you know, around his knees, you know, he had a couple of injuries, and he never quite Sean, and you know, I guess it's, you know, we're going to drag it back to Jorge Mendes, as 99% of Wolves stuff is, but I guess that's the problem sometimes when you Mendes almost wheels and deals two players almost in the same position, and it's hard to match that development across multiple players in the same position. But I think if Wolves can get Ait Nouri, I think it's a really solid bit of business. And you know, we've talked about the things Dan said about Vinagre and game time. Ait Nouri got that second half of the season with Marcel out injured as well, who will be interesting to see how he fits in next season, if at all. I'm really positive about Ait Nouri if and when it's confirmed. Fingers crossed it is. That's the transfer catch-up, guys. After the break, we are going to be talking season tickets and also a bit about training gear as well, because who doesn't like a little bit of gear? Not like that, guys. Fab, we'll be back right after this short break. Hello and welcome back, guys. So on Monday, it is Monday. Oh, crikey, I almost lost track of the days of the week. It's only literally Monday, guys. Wolves announced their season ticket prices after, I guess, a lot of speculation following the Ask Wolves series and some bits and bobs floating online about the season ticket prices. So, I won't rattle them all through you because if you are listening, you're just going to hear me repeat a load of numbers. But to give you sort of a couple of the key ones, adult season ticket in the Stan Cullis, if you didn't have your if you had your refund, so full games is £549. If you're in the Steve Belupper, it's £643. If you do get those extra four game rebate, it does drop to £443 in behind the goal, so South Bank, North Bank, and £507 in the Steve Belupper, which is where I guess predominantly most of the season tickets are. When the news was announced, what was your initial reaction? I'm going to go to Dan first, as I know you're South Bank, aren't you?
Yep, 27 years, never missed a season. In 27 years, I was at Man United, like most fans. I'm just ecstatic with the pricing. You saw that Ask Wolves episode with Darth Clark. And the way it was perceived that we were going to be talking £700, £800 season tickets. And for me to have a season ticket with the rebate, which comes to £433.42, which averages to £22.81 a game, that's just, you can't knock them. I know next season is going to be through the fucking roof, but for this summer, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think you've touched upon something there that I think we've got to live in the moment a little bit with season tickets and season ticket prices. And it's all going to be dependent on where we'll finish next year, what the economic state of the, I guess, footballing landscape is. Stu, you're Steve Belupper. So I think from some lovely rough maths, we won't go full number wang, but would I be right in thinking yours went up by about £99?
It's amazing how the good seats go up by a higher rate than beyond the goal. I mean, that's the only thing that kind of annoyed me, really, because how can you put some people's tickets up more than others in the same stadium? For things like facilities wise, a worse stand. Which is, it's just baffling. But the actual end price, I'm not overly annoyed about, because I kind of guessed £650 anyway on when we did our the thing up on the videos. But it's just the fact that it was so much more than everyone else, other than the weird Billy Wright new categories thing, which no one who listens to this sits in the Billy Wright anyways, who cares? But
oh God. What'd you say? That's true. We're going to get emails now. At WWFC Fancast, if you want to take a pop at Stu.
But yeah, I did kind of mess up earlier and thought, well, this was my last hurrah had been and gone, but that's sorted now. But and changing the thing to 6 months on direct debit rather than 8 or 10 months where it's been in the past was a bit of a shitty thing to do. And I think a lot of people, well, some people are going to be affected by that. I mean, my sister's not renewed for that reason. She can't afford
really?
It. Yeah, I texted both of them. My brother has. My sister's not. I mean, she's had one since 99. No more for her. And she's a teacher as well, so swimming in that DuckTales money. But it's, I think they've played a blinder here with how the videos came out and Darth Vinny, like Dan alluded to, making it out that they were going to go up a massive amount, and then to put it up to round about what you expected it to be, they look better than they could have done. I mean, I still say there was no need to do it, like a lot of clubs haven't done it. That was my personal view, that I didn't want anything to change. But it's not the end of the world. If last season had happened, it would have gone up the same amount, 45 to 50 quid, that it went up the other years under Fowson. So it's to be expected. And next season, I fully expect it to be 700 quid to sit in there. But so at this moment in time, not as bad as it could have been. But again, bad points on the direct debit for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, the direct debit one's an interesting financial one for me, because Fosun / the club in a few of the dealings, and I think it's football in general, actually, you think of the Jota deal, and even to a degree about Aitnori, what do they say? Turnover's vanity, profit's sanity, but cash flow is king. And you're seeing more and more clubs are focusing on making sure they've got either money up front or doing what they can to maneuver it. And the Jota one was on Liverpool's way of how they want to do it in terms of spreading the finance, and there's not really getting much cash flow. Aitnori, we're getting a lower price now, so we've got a lump sum of money, but paying less and having, as you mentioned, about a potential very big sell-on fee. And this is just another way to do it, but on a slightly different layer. I think it is a bit crap that it's not spread over the entire course of the season. I really do, because it used to be from August to May, or August to April time, I think it used to be.
I mean, two years ago, it was from May till December. So you, after you, then you had January to May to kind of, you had freedom money. But that's what the last direct debit 2 years ago. Before that, I always bought it as is, so I'm not sure about that. But to go from, and I know it's not their fault that they couldn't have put the actual prices up and sell the tickets until King Boris said so and whatever. But still, does that really matter? An extra 2 months for a few thousand people might be the case of, like my sister, the end. It's just a bit shit, really.
I know, and it's difficult, because I can I've got no qualms with when the club have announced season tickets, because if you're in the financial position where you have to save, I guess, on a monthly basis, you know, almost those 4 months a year where you're not paying it, or 6 months now, then those extra couple of months, you're still committed to that process, and having that wait a bit longer, it's an inconvenience rather than a complete barrier. So, like, I think I said previously on the Fancast that I wasn't getting a season ticket this year, but I wasn't going to have a season ticket last year, and how we've gone all through COVID, my situation, well, financially hasn't changed for me to change that. So I've almost not really got anything in this fight. But I think probably after the 18 months or whatever you want to call it we've had with COVID, I was listening to a football podcast from March last year about how football could change, and I think some people will have gone off it, and they weren't necessarily prioritize it in the same way. So actually, I looked at the prices, and you know, for me, it would, it's the same as Dan. I sit about 50 seats away from Dan or something silly, and I'd have technically got the 4-game rebate, so it would have been 22 quid a game. And I did for a split second go, maybe, you know, and then I went, no, that's silly, because it's still, you know, it's still kind of outside of what I need to prioritize at the moment. And as I say, I think COVID's probably done that for a lot of people, because, you know, I think for in the South Bank, it's only gone up like £35 from a year ago. Have I made that up completely?
It's not far off.
No, I think it's not. It doesn't feel like a huge amount. Problem is, as soon as you get to, like, I guess, past that £50 mark, £100 can feel like quite a lot of money to some people. And I can see why initially, Stu, you went, hang on, this isn't an automatic. I mean, for you, it wasn't even like you'd gone past an automatic yes to, well, hang on, I need to consider this to hell no. And if I've had a look online, I've read through various threads of journalists and the club, and it's so difficult for a club, because I think even if they'd have frozen the prices, people would have complained, wouldn't they? Let's be honest.
Well, I think they would have done, because a couple of clubs have lowered theirs, and there's always a comparison, despite each club being completely different to each other. And you only have to look down the road at the Loserville and then Villa. Both of them are cheaper than Wolves. So for Albion, you expect that, because but Villa have got a bigger stadium, so they can be cheaper. And we kind of stuck in a tiny stadium with one stand that was built in 1979 that's not really fit for purpose anymore, yet that's the one that's been battered with a price increase.
Yeah. But and I'm probably going to steal Dan's point here, so I can let you expand on it. But yesterday, we signed a lad, and let's be honest, it is a lad, on 140 grand a week. We can't necessarily. I don't know the clubs who haven't. Maybe Leicester, because they're really fan pushed, and I bet we like Burnley haven't increased their prices because they're Burnley. But if we're going to make moves in the league, then there does need to be a level of real world in terms of where that's going to come from, unfortunately. And it does hit fans.
You did some really strong common sense talking in regards to financial life a few minutes ago, Rich, in regards to cash flow. And it's the same with what you said, Stu, to a degree. You would have preferred to pay over 8 months instead of 6 months, because for that given month, you've got a bit more disposable income instead of over eight. You know what I mean?
It's a 33% decrease in what you've got to be paying. This has got very numbers heavy, guys, and I feel like we're about to either really alienate our audience or really pull them in closer.
Rather than to alienate them with financial common sense. And a lot of people don't grasp this, because it's not their money, it's Fosun's money, and they're a business. Fans saying what is £2 to £3 million revenue by charging extra amount of season ticket. Fosun haven't become a billion pound valued company by giving £2 to £3 million away every year.
Yeah.
I know it's not nice to know. It's not nice to hear, and everyone thinks they deserve more money, and we're all underpaid and overworked at work. But we're not a football-owned club like Leicester's is. Their owner bought into Leicester, made good money off Leicester, and now they're giving the fans a little bit back, but they're still making profit year on year, whilst spending decent amounts of money. Recently, Fosun have made two big losses, two seasons in a row, and that's why we're having to pay these little bit of increases every year to be able to afford players who are on 140 grand a week.
I think it was genius announcing his signing yesterday. Because
it's just basic marketing PR.
No one ever announces a signing on a Sunday, especially when there's a Grand Prix on. There'd been the whole thing. Was it the day before? Was it the Friday or the Saturday that it was announced about the you're coming home thing? And it's to be announced Monday. Mm. So you had all the kind of the speculation, or what's it going to be? And you had the whole, I think Molyneux Mix was in meltdown straight away, and from what we'd been led to believe. And then they announced Trincao, and you think, okay. You kind of readjust now. They're not pissing about. They're not scrimping. They're doing things properly, and this is ambitious. And then for the tickets prices to come out today and not be horrendous was perfect.
I tweeted and weirdly got some guy who doesn't follow me call me out on what was sort of a half joke. I think I tweeted last night saying my prediction is today we were going to sign Ait Nouri. He was going to show off the new shirt, like, you know, have it on. And then, like, an hour later, it'll be like, really quick, like, oh, season ticket announcement, and, you know, very, I guess, politics tactic of trying to, you know, hide the bad news, so to speak. But I guess, speaking of new kits and my potential envisionment of Wolves trying to bury the season tickets somewhat, and to a degree they have, but Wolves have dropped the new training tops. So it's been our first, I guess, proper look into what Castor have to offer Wolves. We haven't got the new kits just yet. I'm assuming it's probably going to be later this week or next week at the current rate. But first glances, we've got some green and gold bits. Stu, you're our resident...
nonce.
I was trying to work out a word I could use which was that.
Fashionista.
Fashionista. Yes, our resident fashionista.
Well, we've got nonce financing now, so we can use that word freely. As long as we don't mention anything regarding nonces and Wales, we're all okay. I don't like it at all, to be honest.
So that must mean, I think, Dan, we could probably agree that it means the kit's probably sort of pretty tidy.
Yeah, it's for the working class man with a bit of style, whereas Stu's just the working class man with zero style.
And it's, I mean, I did say when we first saw it and everyone was all getting all overexcited, and it could be one of them because it's teal and it's weird, and seeing it in person might change my mind. And it does look, it looks all right in some pictures, in others it looks kind of awful. But the actual design, not bad, but the colour... it's never really worked, teal and gold.
I like the design of it, but I'm not really sure on the color scheme. And like, this is going to sound a bit dweeby, but these players are going to be training in this kit like 5-6 days a week either side of a match day. Shouldn't they really be in the same sort of similar kit to what they're going to be playing on a match day, so they've sort of got a continuous periphery of where their own players should be? Am I stupid in thinking that?
No one has the same colour training kit.
I know, but why not?
Why don't sportsmen train in the replica tops? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, because it just becomes a more regimented thing of, if I see this sort of colour in my periphery, that's where I'm passing to, instead of looking for a fucking green goblin now.
See, I do get from the kit, I mean, because there's been two, hasn't there? There's been, I guess, a black with a bit of teal, not, well, it's almost sky blue, turquoise on the tops. But you've also got the one which gives that sort of very big South African rugby kit vibes as well, which I actually do quite like. I'm not going to lie, I'm happy with that because it reminds me of the goalkeeping tops of yore, by which I mean the 90s.
Yeah. It's, I think the one with the blue bits on, though, it's black with sky blue kind of shoulder pads, but then it's got gold under the arm as well. Just looks like you've just thrown colour all over the place. And obviously that's never a bad thing, but in this case...
People paid for this.
Yeah. This is custom. This is what... this is our unique look.
I understand nowadays with football boots that kids want, like, over the top of luminous colours and different designs. But for just training gear, which the adults will want to wear predominantly. The kids want the strips, the adults want the training gear predominantly in my eyes. So why would you go Well yeah. That says it all with you, Stu, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I was gonna say that almost feels like a good point to leave on. Apart from it seems sort of expensive. But I think we've literally just talked about football finances very badly, and we're going to have the same conversation over and over again, because I think this is always a really nice point to wrap up the second half of the show, but people always buy it.
Yeah. I think I won't buy it. I might get the shorts are all right, though, to be fair. Yeah. The grey shorts with 28 quid, though, a pair of shorts. But at least the badge is embroidered this year. Rather than the Adidas nonsense that just looked like it was just sellotaped on.
No, I can completely get on board with that. And that wraps up the show really nicely for today, gents. Hopefully we'll be back soon rather than later, guys, to discuss any transfers coming in, transfers going out. Might even do a full kit special but I don't quite know how we'll do that in a audio world, but we'll do our best to describe to you wonderful people. Big thanks to everyone who has listened and even watched today's show. As always, make sure you keep up with all our social media at we're at Wolves Fancast. I've slipped into my old ways there, guys. At Wolves Fancast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We are part of the 90 Min Football Network family, so make sure you check out any of their stuff as well. And also big shout out to the sports shop over in King's Winsford as well. I guess as I say, that wraps up for today. Big thank you to Stu and Dan for joining me today, and we will be back hopefully very soon. Have a good one, guys.